we're back.
Welcome to No Direction, the Pathfinder News, Reviews, and Interviews podcast. I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
Today is an unusual episode for us. We are recording on a Thursday live because we just couldn't wait. We couldn't wait until next Wednesday to talk about the major announcement that came out from Paizo on Tuesday, pretty much out of the blue, that Pathfinder 2nd Edition is a thing. So joining us for the Pathfinder 2nd Edition special edition of No Direction is the Chief Creative Officer and Publisher of Paizo, Mr. Eric Bona.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad we had you on a couple of weeks ago to get all that not Pathfinder 2nd Edition stuff out of the way.
Boy, it was a little bit of a challenge not to spill the beans.
And joining us is designer for Pathfinder and one of the main designers for the Pathfinder 2nd Edition, Mr. Logan Bonner.
Hey, everybody.
How you doing, Logan?
Not bad. Intensive playtesting and answering editor questions, a lot to do right now.
Well, thank you both for taking the time to talk to us, because I know that people are just super excited. And even though you've been extremely forthcoming with information about how the playtest is going to go and what to expect in the Pathfinder playtest book that will eventually lead to Pathfinder 2nd Edition, there's still so many questions.
Let's hope we have answers.
Indeed. Actually, as Piano Man said, he's barely been doing any work in the last couple of days, just trying to keep up with all the message boards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that's actually one thing I kind of want to...
Actually, since I mentioned Piano Man, we are live.
Yes, we are live on twitch.tv/nodirection. If you want to join in the chat, or if you're hearing this and you're not in the chat, that means that you're listening to the recording. But next time we air, you can join us in the chat and get your questions answered right away. We have some pre-submitted questions. We also are going to be taking questions from the chat throughout the episode. So if you want to know anything, speak up and we'll introduce it into the show. Now, that actually leads me to a question. For those of you, this is the easy one, that may not know what a Pathfinder 2.0 is, can you give the elevator pitch?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk a little. Yeah, Pathfinder 2nd Edition is an evolution of the Pathfinder role-playing game, which we launched with a playtest in 2008 and the final version in 2009. As we approach 2019, which will be the 10-year anniversary of Pathfinder, we wanted to update the rules and kind of add some of the innovations like archetypes and other elements of the game we've added over the last decade back into the game. And I've always been of the opinion, sort of as the publisher and as the guy who ultimately, I guess, is my decision of when we did this, I always wanted to make sure that if we were going to, as I often say, sort of open the patient and perform surgery on one thing, that we might as well take care of a whole bunch of stuff. So we could have, you know, a couple years after the Advanced Player's Guide, we could have just kind of reopened the files for the core rulebook, added a little section on archetypes, and then we're off to the races. But I didn't want to do that. I thought that'd be really disruptive. So we wanted to get to the point where we had a big enough core of new rules and enough experience with the base system for Pathfinder that we had ideas for ourselves of how we would change the system, how we would improve it, make it easier to learn, faster to play, but still offer the depth of complexity and sort of character options and customization that makes Pathfinder so popular. We wanted to know what we wanted so that we could create another playtest so that you guys could tell us what you want. Pathfinder was really born out of a big open playtest. So we always knew that when we would do a second edition of the game, we would want to follow a similar pattern, and that's exactly what we'll be doing. So for in August of this year, 2019, we will be releasing a playtest version of the Pathfinder RPG 2nd Edition, which is something Logan and the other designers, Jason Bowman, Stephen Randy McFarland, and Mark Seifter, and indeed the entire Paizo staff, have been working on for a couple of years.
Yeah. Sorry, Eric, did you say this year, 2019?
Yeah, I'm very confused with sleep deprivation. This year, 2018, is when we're going to be putting out the playtest version with the final actual slate of second edition products to be released in August of 2019.
Now, when we have big announcements like this for a new game, usually we're kind of used to this dance by now, not just from your company, but from other companies, where there's the announcement of the product and then the slow tease, and then we get the bigger announcement and then the more details and then the blog post. You guys turned on the fire hose. What was the decision to just hit us all at once with a mountain of info?
Well, it's Well, first of all, we know people would have a lot of questions. So, you know, if we had just sort of put on a Twitter post like, hey, y'all, second edition Pathfinder's coming, then the entire internet would catch on fire, and that fire would soon come to our office. And since none of us really want to burn, we thought it would be a good idea to reveal a whole bunch of information about a lot of different topics. Of course, over the next several months, we'll be going into greater detail on a lot of those individual topics. And in fact, even later in this podcast, I think we'll get into some of it.
And I think there's also a lot of stuff that, because of the Glass Cannon actual play podcast, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that we haven't revealed in full in the,
right.
through the blog, but there's a lot of like tidbits that people have latched on.
I think like a surprisingly large number, actually, yeah. you know, and yeah. so there's already been some, I saw a YouTube video the other night. I've seen posts on Reddit and things like that where people try to call a lot of that information out of yeah. the live play, which was great. I mean, really, the technical reason of why now is that last time we did this, we were going to release the playtest of the beta rules for free online, and that's exactly what we're doing this time. But back then we thought, you know, if you take the files to a print shop, you know, at the time it was Kinko's, you know, we priced out how much it would cost, and it turned out to actually be cheaper just to buy a professionally printed version of the book than to print it yourself. So we made several thousand sort of thinking, probably no one's going to want this, but we might as well do it. And they sold out in like 3 days. And so, which I like to think started a grand tradition of us underprinting important products. But one of the things that's really important to us is to bring in our hobby retail partners to make sure that they have the opportunity to participate in the playtest and in the selling of the various formats of the three products that we're putting out for the playtest, which are the playtest rulebook, the playtest adventure, and the flip mat multi-pack that goes with the playtest adventure. Since we knew we were going to sell those in retail stores, coming up next week is a trade show called the Gamma Trade Show, where all the retailers and distributors in the hobby game industry will be gathering together for conferences and discussions about the next year's product and stuff. So really, we wanted to make sure that we were going to go into that event ready to bring retailers in on this project. And I should say, although we don't start selling the playtest products on Paizo.com until the 20th, when we get back from the trade show, you can download and order pre-order form right now on Paizo.com and take it to your local retailer, and they already have the ability to place pre-orders with all their distributors as well. So we're giving them a little bit of a head start, just kind of because they're such important partners for us. So really, it comes down, as it often does, to kind of inside baseball business stuff, but that sort of answers the why now, as opposed to just like a day before Gen Con or something like that.
I like inside baseball more than regular baseball.
Yeah, me too.
So here's
Logan,
a question.
When somebody came up to you and said, hey, what would you do for a Pathfinder 2nd Edition? What was on that list?
This is one of the things that, like, even before we started in earnest on the edition, there were already, like, compilations of various things that had been annoying fans about the previous edition, styles that we'd been using for years that the editors were sick of and that kind of thing. So there was a lot of stuff that was just kind of already in the hopper, because anytime you're working on a game, particularly one this big, you're always finding things that you wish were a little bit different. And eventually you kind of just hit critical mass on all that stuff and realize, okay, here's how we fix it. Here's how we fix this. I think for me, the biggest thing is just kind of streamlining some of the math so that instead of having something that looks really good, which the progressions of like, it's one third of your level or it's one half of your level, a lot of those things look really good on paper. They sound really good, but they don't really hold up very well once you're hitting higher levels. And then it's just like, oh, this means you're totally amazing at this, and you are. There's absolutely no point in this other person trying at all. And we wanted it to be a little bit closer to the lower level experience, where it's like, oh, yes, you're way better at this, but you can at least try it. It's not a complete waste of your time, especially when you look at stuff like attack bonuses, and the disparity between the classes. For me, I think that's part of it, is making the experience feel a little more cohesive across the levels, and to make it so that things that feel like you should be able to do it are things you actually can attempt. Because I really don't like when you get in a situation where there is a reasonable expectation that if this character attempts to sneak past a guard, there's some chance, because they know what they're doing, that they might succeed. But if the player actually decides to do that, everybody else at the table says, whoa, 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 don't do that. That's a really bad idea. So I think that was one of the biggest things for me early on.
I think many of us at Paizo had little files on our computers of like, when we get a chance to change this, let's get rid of this thing. And so you could kind of ask that question to pretty much everybody at the company, and they would probably all answer with a very specific, you know, different thing that's always stuck in their craw or whatnot. I have a little bit of a unique perspective because I've been at Paizo since the very first day of Paizo back in 2002. And when we started, we'd been working on Dragon and Dungeon magazines under license from Wizards of the Coast. Some of us had even worked in, you know, at WotC on those projects. And so by the time, you know, 2009 rolled around, many of us in the office, Jason Bowman, our lead designer, myself, James Jacobs, all of whom are still here, we'd already had like basically a decade of professional experience working with the game and trying to adapt adventures to it, writing monsters for it, developing characters, playing campaigns, running campaigns, doing OP, all that kind of stuff. And so when it came time to kind of make Pathfinder, we were able to take those 10 years of experience and things we loved, things that we were frustrated by, and channel that into some of the changes that went into the first edition of Pathfinder. And basically now we're in a similar position with Pathfinder itself. We've been working on it for a decade. We have a pretty good idea of what its strengths and weaknesses are. We have a pretty good idea of innovations that we've done over the years that have really hit with people and that people really like, and things that we've done that maybe people would have preferred that we did a different route and stuff like that. So for me, we're just kind of at that point where we've got a similar mass of ideas and thoughts and criticisms that we did the first time around, and it was really time to update the core rulebook. I mean, I think it's past time to update the core rulebook, to be totally honest. The fact of the matter is that Paizo sold more copies of the core rulebook than any other book that we've done, and yet it's the hardcover book that we did that we spent the least amount of time on, the least amount of art budget on. I mean, it's our first book in many ways, and it's a lot different making our 35th book or our 40th book. We know a lot more just about how to make books. So, for example,
you can see that difference really starkly with just the Starfinder
course. Exactly. So, if you look at how information is presented in the core rulebook, all of the chapters are pretty much in the same order that they were in 3.5. You know, all of the information is presented similarly to how it was presented in 3.5. And that might not be the best way, you know, with 20 years of experience with the 3.0 system. That might not be the best way to convey how to advance a character. But we're stuck with that template, you know, that we went with in 2009 that was the same template that was invented in 1999. So there is a point where it's like we can't necessarily just change how we present information in the middle of the edition. This gives us the opportunity to kind of go back to the beginning and say, what's the optimal way to bring somebody into the game? We did that a little bit, by the way, with the Beginner Box, you know, to great excitement. That product we've done, that sold a lot of copies with a lot of different print runs. But you'll notice that, like, between the first and the second print run of the Beginner Box, we added a third book in there, which is like the transition guide. And that's because to make the game accessible to new players, we had to cut so much, you know, no attacks of opportunity, no combat maneuvers, no blah, 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 blah. And so if you're going to transition into the core rulebook, you then had to read another book. And then you go into the core rulebook and you got a book that the visual design and the information design is 6-7 years older. It just, we wanted to ease that transition. And then when you add into it some of the things that kind of, in my opinion, made Pathfinder, which are things like archetypes and to some degree traits, we're doing a different implementation of that in second edition, but those things are not even in the core rulebook. So, you know, we've been sending people to our best-selling book that in many ways is our, I don't want to say our worst produced book, but certainly like we were first level when we made that book, you know, as publishers. Sure. And now, you know, we're, I hope we're at least third.
In 10 years?
Yeah. It's a slow, we're on the slow progression track, Ryan.
Oof.
I feel like rough. In my campaigns, I'm fifth level at the end of the weekend.
Yeah, well.
On my home game, they just hit 6. We've been playing since Pathfinder launched.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
How often do you play?
About once a month with that group.
Okay, well, very good.
Chat right now is really obsessed with the Alchemist, so why don't we start there? There's going to be 12 classes in the core rulebook. It's going to be the 11 classes from the core rulebook first edition plus the Alchemist. So if you told me that there were just going to be 12 classes, I think the Alchemist would have been one of the ones I expected. But if you told me it was going to be the base 11 plus one, I'm surprised the Alchemist is the one that made the cut. So what's up with the Alchemist?
So one of the things about the Alchemist is that its design is kind of, its original Pathfinder 1 design is kind of making a lot of compromises to work within the system. And we knew that if we put it in the core book, I mean, first of all, it's popular. So that was part of it. It's one of the popular classes that we knew people were going to want early. And the other part is that if we put it in the core rulebook, we can really look at what does alchemy mean and how should it work and build that into the game from the get-go. So there's a big section on alchemical items that anybody can take. The alchemist uses them more, but we don't kind of have to rely on spells to be the alchemist's bread and butter. Instead, we can say, what does alchemy do? What are some alchemical items that we want to incorporate into the game? How does crafting alchemical stuff work? And bake that all into the system from the get-go as kind of a core part of how the system's structured, and just make it a lot cleaner and a lot easier to figure out for the player.
I think also for me, just from a sort of managing Pathfinder as a brand perspective, it was really important that we get some stuff into the corpus of core rules that is honestly uniquely Pathfinder. You know, I'm not really satisfied, you know, just sort of making another version of D&D. I want to make the best version of Pathfinder that we possibly can. And so that's part of the reason why the Alchemist goes in there. It's part of the reason why we're incorporating the Goblin, which is obviously a creature that's become really associated with our brand. We're going to throw that in there as well. Just give the whole thing a little bit more of a Pathfinder spin instead of just like, here's our take on somebody else's ideas.
We have a lot of questions about the Goblin.
So oh, I imagine we do.
But so the arguments for including the Alchemist could also be applied for including the Gunslinger and like some version of psychic magic. So why did science make it, but psychic magic and guns didn't?
I'll answer why guns didn't.
Okay.
Because the other one, I don't think we can answer that yet. I think one of the reasons that guns didn't make it is just because it's just a little far outside of kind of the general conception of fantasy, and just in the world, they're pretty rare.
Yeah.
The number of gunslingers compared to the number of alchemists is just smaller. So we kind of knew that their footprint just wouldn't be quite as big.
Yeah, gunslingers are, I think, a really interesting class, especially in the context of a new edition and what we can do with the class and things. But it's like Logan said, it's one step removed from most people's concept of fantasy. Even within the concept, the context of Galarian, it's mostly limited, you know, to Alkenstar and some other places as well. But we know that whereas I think we can say, hey guys, an alchemist is now kind of part of the core concept, there's not really a lot of people who are going to be like, well, I don't use potions in my game, so that doesn't make sense. But there are a lot of people who would prefer that gunslinger be an option rather than something that's included right in. And so I think, for example, if we were to do gunslinger in, let's say, the second or the third or the fourth, you know, book that we'll release in second edition, which I think is quite plausible, I think by putting it in a secondary book, we give some GMs the opportunity to kind of say, it's okay if I don't want to use guns in my campaign, and we definitely think that's okay.
And it's also, like you said, the extendability of alchemy to other characters is really high. So putting alchemy stuff in the core rulebook, it's very easy to see how all the other characters are using that. But since we know this is going to be kind of the most used book, we don't know if we really want every fighter to have a backup pistol.
Yeah,
so it's kind of,
exactly.
You
know, and I guess one other thing I would say as a semi-frequent Pathfinder Society GM is I really want to put the gun rules, and particularly the gunslinger rules, through a really robust public playtest. And I would like the camera to be focused on that a little bit more than on the entire rule set, because it is an outlier. And from my perspective, and this is just me as a player, and not necessarily speaking for Paizo or speaking for the design team, certainly, but I find that when I'm most frustrated with the Pathfinder rules or with how some encounter has gone, gunslingers are very frequently near the center of the bullseye of what's sort of bothering me. And I don't know if other people necessarily feel that way. I mean, I think there's many things about the class that are just awesome, but that is a class I think could use some really careful fine-tuning and balancing. And frankly, some of the additions to the system, I think, will make gunslingers even more interesting to play in the new edition. But some of that, I guess what I would call, like, I put the kineticist actually in a similar role of like and the summoner, frankly, you know, classes that are just a little bit more techie, a little bit more advanced than, say, the fighter or even the cleric. And I think I want to make sure that the audience, but just as importantly, the designers and us and our editing team and all that, have a better sense of what the ecosystem of the game, the base game, gets is like before we start getting into some of the really crazy stuff. But that said, we know we can't put off those really popular things forever. And we also know, incidentally, that this journey on second edition can't just be reminting every first edition thing. You know, it's like, okay, here's exactly the same monsters, here's exactly the same classes. We're going to do some new stuff that people have never seen before. But we also know that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who I think when they heard, oh, second edition Pathfinder, maybe even particularly within the framework of Pathfinder Society, who are like, whoa, what am I going to do with my sort of, you know, the my Arcanist or my Investigator or my fill in the blank, essentially, you know, we want to give people answers to that as soon as we can.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, Eric. I have a friend in Pathfinder Society who mostly plays witches. So she's been like, am I not going to be able to play any more witches for 3 or 4 years?
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, without getting into decisions we frankly haven't even made around here, the witch is a very, very popular class, you know, and so I can't even, it's impossible for me to imagine a world in which your friend's going to have to wait 3 to 4 years.
That's also one of the classes, like, because witch was kind of on the list.
Yeah,
the short
it
list
almost
of
made
awesome
it in,
illusions.
Yeah.
But it's also one where it's like, if you want to make a character who functions a lot like a witch, you can do that fairly easily with what's in the core rulebook. The Alchemist, nope.
Right.
If we didn't give you all the rules for it, it'd be really hard to make an Alchemist type character.
So if you don't want to just remit what's out there, why have the same 11 core classes?
Because people will totally freak out if we don't. And, you know, I mean, honestly, part of this is I've been watching edition changes since 1989, and taking things away from people is never a good idea. It's never gone over well.
It's great to be able to say, here's everything you had plus four.
Right, exactly.
It's less good to say.
So here's the seven. Is it being moved to the bestiary?
Yeah, I mean, look, without sort of picking on anybody, like, yeah, that was a good example of people freaking out is when the gnome sort of disappeared from 4th edition D&D, and we're just not interested in taking away core bits. And we're not really interested in taking away much of anything, honestly, unless it's something that we've got a better idea for. But we can't do 40-some classes in one book, you know? And so, again, it's like, it plays into that, like, we need to make sure that the foundations of the core system are sound, and the playtest is a huge part of that, the external playtest. But we're also doing internal playtests like crazy, you know, and that's letting Logan and Steven and Mark and Jason and everybody else who gets pulled into the playtest to give their input and to get a better understanding of this thing. And I think that, quite frankly, I think those classes will be better off with more fine-tuning of the core before we really delve deep into their design.
Hey, Eric, would it break your heart to know that you've been observing edition changes as long as I've been alive?
No, it just means I'm that much wiser, Alex.
Yeah, no, you were talking about third level. I'm pretty sure that's more than third level, Eric.
Well, I don't like to... I'm really 26. What can I say?
What happened?
Brian!
No, boy.
Hey, maybe I need an addition change in my fresh coat of paint.
All right, so this kind of ties into something that Logan was... We got a question from chat. This kind of ties into something Logan was talking about earlier. Actually, it doesn't. I just goofed on that. They're asking, how easy would it be to simulate the hybrid classes with the Core 12 in 2nd edition?
Fairly easy. I mean, there are some of them that, because we're kind of doing it a little more customizable than some of them were initially, I think we've talked a little bit about it. You get class feats, and every other level you get a class feat, and that's a pretty broad pool. There are going to be options that resemble some of those classes a fair amount. It's going to depend a lot on the individual class. If you want to do like a war priest, I think you could do a pretty good war priest. Investigator might be a little more of a challenge. Yeah, it varies quite a bit.
We've also got, archetypes being built into the core now. So are any of the classes going to be rebranded as archetypes?
Unknown. We've looked at it, but I want to be mindful of, like, taking something that was a core class and kind of demoting it, because that's the kind of thing that can make people be like, well, I used to play an investigator, and now it's just an archetype. That kind of feels like a downgrade. And I think there are some classes that can work really well as just archetypes and others that just don't. So that's something we've been a little too focused on the core game to really get too deep into. So we're going back and forth a lot on how we want to deal with those individual individual archetypes. And I'll also say for the playtest rulebook, we have some archetypes in there, but we've gone with a pretty small selection of them, partially just for space, and partially because we want to test out some of those concepts before we flesh them out fully.
Yeah, the space thing is worth talking about. You know, like, we've been saying that the playtest rulebook's going to be 400 pages, 416 pages, somewhere in there. I suspect it'll be maybe a little smidgen longer than that, but the actual rulebook in 2019, the only sort of guideline I've given the team is that it can't be bigger than the current Pathfinder book. So I'm holding the line at 576 pages, and that gives these guys a little bit more leeway to create new stuff to address issues that come up during the playtest.
Yeah.
And more archetypes will definitely, I assume, be part of that.
And is the idea that what's in this playtest hardcover is the template for what's going to be in the second edition core rulebook?
We don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, if you use a loose interpretation of the word template, I would say
yes. I never
yes,
do.
You know? Okay, well then. I would say that, you know, it's going to have ancestries, it's going to have backgrounds, it's going to have classes, it's going to have equipment, it's going to have magic items, it's going to have spells, you know, and the ones that we're putting in there are ones that at least as of today we think belong in the right. core rules. Now that said, if we have an item in there and everyone's like, this item is preposterous, well, it might go away. You know, if we have cut a spell, for example, because we don't think it's that meaningful, and then in the playtest everyone's like, we missed that spell,
Shambler, where's Shambler,
you know, it might come back. So it's hard to say, but I think that, you know, looking at the section breakdowns once you get a hold of the book, it's very, very similar to what the final book will look like. But we hope to implement as much playtest feedback and new material as we possibly can.
And we've talked about this some on the message boards and stuff, but there are a fair number of things where we weren't sure if we wanted to make a big leap on something.
Yeah.
And like the design team couldn't decide, Eric couldn't decide. And so we said, all right, this is the playtest. Let's do the more extreme thing. And then if it doesn't work, we know it doesn't work. We get to find out whether the extreme thing works or whether we want to walk it back.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some envelope pushing, you know, in this book. And that's because if we do it now, we do have a chance to pull back if we have to. I think that one of the things that surprised us about the first approach was the sense of, like, some members of the community wanted us to push things even further. And at the time, we were really, really wanted to focus on, you know, improving the 3.5 engine, but really retaining sort of backwards compatibility, like, as in as explicit a sense of that term as possible. And now, with another 10 years under our belt, there are definitely some places where I think we feel like the flow of play, the game balance, stuff like that is probably more important than having it match exactly with, you know, Magic of Incarnum or something like that.
Is the intention to still have a game mastering section in, I'm calling it the core rulebook, I don't know if that's going to change, but what will be the second edition?
Yeah, there'll be a game master section in the book. Yeah. In fact, there's a game mastering section in the playtest book.
Yeah, and one of the things we're kind of looking at is, because we're planning ahead a little bit for the Game Mastery Guide, and one of the things we're looking at for the core rulebook is to kind of say, here's the basic stuff you need to run a game, which is not particularly different from the first edition core rulebook. This is the basic stuff you need to run the game. If you really want to design a whole bunch of stuff from scratch, that's when you want the Game Mastery
Guide. Yeah, that's probably another book.
Chat was asking a lot about how archetypes are going to work. They're asking if it's going to be like in Starfinder or something totally different or similar to what it was in first edition.
It's not that much like Starfinder, and it's not that much like first edition. It's kind of one of the more experimental parts of the rules. I don't think we want to say a whole lot about it.
I think we're going to let the blog and some examples and stuff speak for that
one. I will say that we've taken a few different concepts that were kind of all pointing at the same type of character customization and kind of said, that's all under the archetype umbrella. So we're interested to see how people react to that,
for sure.
Then just one follow-up. Is it going to be class-specific, or is it going to be a broad concept that multiple classes can qualify for?
It's going to be a broad concept, but we can also do whatever prerequisites we need. We're sticking with pretty broad ones in the playtest book, just because we only have a small number of them. But if we wanted to do a wizard-specific one, there's nothing stopping it.
And I think, you know, while we're talking about archetypes, I think it's worth pointing out that a good example of an opportunity that's presented by a second edition that we've been essentially denied for the last 8 years or so is when we did the first core rulebook, we didn't even have archetypes as an idea. Archetypes came out of the Advanced Player's Guide. Again, I feel like the Advanced Player's Guide, when it introduced traits and archetypes in six classes that were not in the core, that's to me kind of when, as a rule set, Pathfinder kind of became Pathfinder. But because of the sort of the archetypes coming after the core classes, the idea of swapping out, you know, powers and things like that, there's nothing for the cleric to swap out. So clerics and cleric players have been denied a fundamental part of the Pathfinder core rules pretty much since the beginning for no reason other than there's really just no reason, you know? And so that's one of the things that we wanted to look at as well, just to make sure that that archetype access was something that no class was denied out of a mistake of its origin, essentially.
Now, when you mentioned that on the thread before, you said it was one of your top five pet peeves of Pathfinder. What are the other four?
Yeah. Okay, I don't know if I can rattle them off all off the top of my head, and I also am not saying that these things are things that have been specifically addressed by the new edition of the game. I hate identifying magic items. I think that is the stupidest waste of time in the entire game. I don't like that kind of mother may I secret holding from players. It doesn't make it, it doesn't help at all. Just tell them it's a plus one sword and move on with it. Now, I know how we are addressing that in second edition, and I think it's pretty awesome. So that's one thing that I really don't like. Let me think a little bit about some of the other ones, but that I hate that with a burning passion. And then I hate a bunch of stupid stuff, like how all of our hags are alphabetized by their first letter and not gathered in hags. And a lot of it's just stupid editorial pet peeves, you know, that really doesn't affect the
gameplay.
Why
are feats a different format from spells when they're all stat blocks?
Yeah, yeah. The stuff that makes me mad is not necessarily the stuff that makes every gamer mad.
Robes, comma, monk?
Yeah, Robes. Dumb stuff like that. You're making my skin itch. Yeah.
So speaking about stuff that makes you mad, how easy is it to build Astag the Unslain in the playtest?
You know, that is a good question, and one that I actually haven't
I think Mark
even tried.
Might have put together an Astag-esque character. I think it was like Astag or something for one of the playtests.
Two S's, yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that I would probably change with Astag the Unslain, who, for those of you who don't know, is the barbarian character that I played all through our office campaign since like the year before Pathfinder came out, just to like last year, and got him up to like 17th level with three mythic tiers, and it was a big epic campaign that James ran for the staff. And the whole idea behind him was I wanted to have like the classic, yeah, okay, so there you go, you can see him. That is the toy that I brazenly had made of my own character. Basically, I wanted to have the sort of shirtless barbarian character that's on the cover of all the books, but that has never really been a viable character concept in the game. And even Jason was like, that's not viable, and I'm like, well, I'm doing it anyway. And and then forced him to put a archetype in the player's guide to make it work, and which is a great power to have. I highly recommend it. And but one big difference I think that I would do if I was playing him, and this is as much for fun as it is mechanically oriented, is I would probably, instead of having Astag use a two-handed sword, I would probably give him a shield. I really like how shields work in the new game, and in particular the way that when you raise your shield as one of your three actions in a round, you can sort of absorb the damage of a hit with using the hardness of the shield, and that is just badass. And I would probably give Astag a shield at the very least.
But could he have just some kind of thick forearm rule so he just could still be fairly naked?
Well, I mean, you could do an archetype or something like that where you know, you don't even need a shield or whatever. Yeah. That's
Popeye arms.
That would be pretty rad. It's just like, I block it with my fuse.
No, no, this
I'm pretty sure you just blew up Twitch with that reveal.
With the entire,
the shield reveal. The entire internet's on flames. Nice job, Eric.
Oh, you just need to listen to the Last Cannon podcast.
Now, this is, I know this is one of your pet peeves. Would you ever give Ostog two shields?
No, but you know, that. I think that's a viable build in the new edition. If, like, if you really could.
If your first shield is going to get wrecked, you want a backup shield.
And if
you put spikes or a shield boss on both of them.
And if you can use a shield, you also can attack with it, right?
Yeah. Kind of mix that up a little bit so it's a little clearer how the weapon part of a shield worked.
Yeah.
So you basically attach a shield boss or shield spikes to it. And the shield boss is if you want to just straight up.
So I do kind of like the idea of a guy who just charges in with two shields and beats the crap out of his enemies. I actually don't know if that's viable, but it would be fun to try.
It's not great. If you remember the Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton, he does that twice. He takes like a tank, rips it in two, uses it as a shield, and to hit people. So there is pop culture justification for it.
It really was the best of all the Marvel MCU movies, wasn't it?
It was an incredible PlayStation 2 game.
It wasn't even the best movie with Hulk in it.
Yeah.
Oh, someone's asking about bucklers, since we're talking about shields. Bucklers are the weird shield in first edition. What are bucklers going to be in second edition?
We haven't tried them yet, so we don't know.
All right, screw bucklers.
I don't know about bucklers.
How much are you putting the tracks in front of the cart right now?
Could you be more specific?
Yeah. You mentioned you don't have bucklers. I mean, how often are you going into a playtest and being like, oh, we need a rule for this now?
Oh.
At this point, not very often.
Yeah.
The very first playtest we did were everybody make a character with all the things it needs. We don't know where any of those things came from. We just had a fighter and a wizard, and we wrote up whatever spells we felt like they should have and however the hell we felt they should work. And is this from a feat? Nobody knows. And just playtested that way. So since then, we have incrementally added actual rules to how all those worked.
I think we're also engaged now in real playtest. Like, we're playtesting the Doomsday Dawn adventure that's going to be released with the rules. And so I think that a difference between, say, playtest now and playtests 5 months ago is we have a much more robust list of designed monsters as well.
We had most of those 5 months ago.
Okay, well, like a year ago. I wasn't messing with them too much. But I was just looking at them right before I came to meet here. And there's, when I'm looking through the classes, the magic items, the spells, stuff like that, those have had a lot of work done on them, and I can kind of make little suggestions and things, but it, you know, I'm not like, oh, we could add this or change this. The monsters, you know, I think there's still some room to mess around with. So it's very exciting to be able to kind of get into the basics of the game and make suggestions and see what these guys have come up with. It's really amazing.
Yeah, for having playtested for the last couple years, the difference now is instead of saying, do we have this rule? We're at the point where we can say, where is this rule in the book?
Right.
So it feels a little more like having the finished game because it's just, we know it's there. We just have to remember where we're
going. I mean, to be clear, there's a finished version of the game's design. It's in what we call development now. It's making its way into editing and graphic design. So major, major parts of the rule book are pretty unlikely to change. We're not going to add another class. For the playtest, yeah. So we're playtesting with a fairly reasonably final version of the rules. Yeah. But of course, it's not too late to make a change. And since I've been watching edition changes since Alex has been alive and have been professionally involved with them since Alex was 9, I have seen how I'm not going to be able to keep these guys' hands out of the manuscript until the minute it goes to the printer anyway. So if we come up with
everybody
a change,
else's hands also.
I know exactly. If we come up with the change, or you know, Lisa Stevens, our CEO, plays it and she's got an idea, like we're going to make changes up until the very last second. But we're not operating off of drafts really anymore like we were a year ago. And it's exciting.
So things are just kind of going nuts in chat. They just, everyone suddenly has questions and they're all over the place. Can we do a little bit of a lightning round to cover some of these?
Sure.
All right, Darren Goldmeyer wants to know, will second edition have a starter box close to launch?
TBD. You know, we haven't really discussed post-playtest products. I think it's in our best interest to have a starter box out as close to launch as we can, but that's also true of a monster book and new character sheets, and, you know, there's just a lot of stuff. And as much as I would love to produce two different versions of the same rule set at the same time, one of the things that we learned from the first time we did the beginner box is we did some market research. We watched people playing the game through like a one-way mirror, which was both the most harrowing and most useful game design experience probably of my life. I had to physically restrain Jason from Kool-Aid Manning through the window just to tell these 15-year-old kids how initiative worked, and it was pretty amazing. He's much bigger than me, so that took a lot of effort on my behalf, but I did it. So I think that there's a difference between how do we rebuild this rule set and how do we implement the playtest feedback of really involved gamers, and how do we create a version of these rules that are going to work with a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old or someone who's not a hobby gamer. Right. And that's going to take testing and careful consideration.
Right. And one of the things we're really trying to accomplish with this rule set is to have the beginner set, beginner box, whatever it's called, to have it operate on the same rules. So rather than saying, here are some rules, if you want to play the full game, you need to use this conversion guide and study all these other rules, we say, here are the rules. We're going to remove the most complex options that you can choose from and just kind of give you something that's a little easier to just write down on your character sheet without making as many decisions or as complex of decisions, and have it so you could just go into a full Pathfinder game and just play.
Yeah, you're still fundamentally playing the same game instead of sort of a dumbed down version of the game.
Right.
That's the idea.
Netto or Nito D20 wants to know if there will be meta magic.
Yes. Next.
Okay.
Yeah, speed round.
Magic items. People want to know how magic items are going to work. Steelwind asked that. There we go.
Magic items are so dope. Let me give you my base impression, and then I think Logan can speak to with much more expertise. But, like, I am loving the way magic items work in the game. And by that, I mean I'm loving a lot of the brand new magic items that are in the rule book. I really kind of challenged these guys not just to sort of, you know, convert the same old items, but to come up with some brand new, really interesting, really exciting items, many of which operate with new elements of the rule system in a way that I find really, really exciting. So as someone who's been through, you know, multiple editions and has seen six different versions of marvelous pigments and crap like that, there's a lot in there that I haven't seen before and that I'm just like so excited about and cackling about. I think that in some ways what's most exciting to me, I mean, oh my God. Plus one swords are so much more exciting to me now than they ever were before, and particularly plus four swords and stuff like that are really exciting. But they've done a great job, in my opinion, of kind of getting rid of some of the items that you sort of need to have just to keep up with the Joneses. So, you know, there's not the same approach to, like, you know, cloaks of deflection and rings of protection. And, you know, it's like, oh, everybody needs that old dusty rose iron stone. You know, like, there's just the sort of that required quest to keep getting those little plus ones is almost, if not completely gone.
It's minimized a lot. There are still a few. There are a few core items, like basically three, or two at lower levels and three at higher levels. But yeah, we wanted to reduce that a little bit, and we wanted to reduce. We kind of went with a different system rather than kind of the body slot system. Mm. Because we wanted to, and it's still kind of an experiment, so we're going to see how people respond to it. But we wanted it where it wasn't just like, okay, I want something in every spot I can fill. Even if it sucks, it's better to have something than nothing here. We wanted to kind of get something where it's like you're really looking at how do I best spend my resources in order to get a small number of really cool items rather than a whole bunch of clutter. And we're going to see how that works.
Well, and also without going into too much detail, you might have eight items but you might be facing a specific series of challenges in a given day where you want to focus on three or four of them over some of the other ones. Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting, there's a lot more sort of interesting decision-making about stuff like that. And not just Magic Items, but kind of across the board.
And you'll also get to the point where it's like, do I want to use this wand or save up for something else? Save my resources for a different thing.
Logan, I could hug you because you just reminded me of one of my other pet peeves. I hate the idea of just like, oh, well, we're all hurt. Well, let's just like, you know, suck down this wand of Cure Light Wounds like it's a big gulp, you know, and just be like, burr, 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 I'm getting better. You know, give me 5 minutes. You know, like, I've never read a fantasy story in my life where someone is just like, let me hit you with 49 charges from this cheap wand. That is so lame, and that's so, like, gamey, and it's crap. And again, I would say it's not really part of the long tradition of the game in so much as it's sort of an artifact of a very specific approach, you know, in 1999 that has just stuck with us. And so I hate that.
Yeah.
I mean, in PFS, they even quit calling it a Wand of Cure Light Wounds. They just call it the Happy Stick.
Yeah, and it's just stupid.
Yeah.
So we're not doing that.
But we can heal, right?
You can heal, but you're going to want to maximize... you're going to want a small number of strong heals rather than a million tiny heals. And there is a cost associated.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that...
you're just using the cheapest one possible.
And you can do that, too. It's just there are other choices that are going to be wiser. We can't really get into too much more details on that, but it's going to be really interesting to see how people react to that aspect, particularly of the Magic Item system.
Next question from chat is from Uchujin51, and is just asking if first-level characters will be as fragile.
Nope.
Yeah, no. In fact, if you listen to the podcast playthrough of Crypt of the Everflame that we did, Jason and I did the other day, you'll see that I think the first level paladin had like 17 or 19 hit points or something like that. So
they're going to get, like you might have seen in Starfinder, they're going to get race hit points, and they're going to get more from their class. That isn't to say that that there's no change from level to level. Like, they're going to have more. But it's still going to be, your life is a little more precarious at first level, just not as precarious as it was in first edition.
Yeah.
So one of the other problems I have with first edition, with first level, is that it feels like players can have the right idea, but just not have access to enough options to properly employ it. And it's very frustrating promising players, like, wait until second level if you're a new player. It does get better and you will be able to do the cool things you have in mind. So, on top of not being fragile, how are first level characters going to be cool?
How are first level characters going to be cool? So they are going to have their number of options is probably comparable to Pathfinder 1 in the number of things that they're choosing. Maybe a little more.
Yeah, I think with ancestors.
But for like feats and it's about the same. But we kind of made those a little stronger. There's a little more going on with them with your first level choices. So like sudden charge for the fighter basically lets you move double your speed and make one attack with two actions. And there's also a lot less kind of featuring where you're going to take something that is kind of okay in order to get something better later. We're trying to do less wait for the cool thing, but you can pick up like sudden charge or double slice or all kinds of cool stuff at first level.
Logan, boy, have I been reading a lot of posts the last few days. And one of the questions that I've been seeing people ask that I actually weirdly don't know the answer to off the top of my head, but I bet you do, is, okay, so if there is a fighter power called sudden charge that you can do and it costs two actions, can my non-fighter just not charge anymore, or is there a normal activity called charge?
There's not a normal action called charge, but you've got three actions on your turn,
right?
And if you want to move twice and attack, you can do that. So essentially, because things are kind of more granular and that you have three actions instead of a standard action, a move action, and et cetera, instead of combining these things into a full action that lets me do this, we just say, yeah, you can do this, and it's pretty clear that you do a stride, a strike.
Right,
and that is.
But I don't get like a plus two in my armor class.
You don't get a plus two. You don't take an AC penalty. Okay. A lot of the stuff that is like kind of a little more complex option with some bonuses and penalties. We kind of pulled back on those because we want you to be doing less of that kind of little math in the middle of the game and focusing more on what am I trying to achieve this round and how do I achieve it.
Also, speaking to that, a lot of times where in first edition it would be like, oh, this power changes your dexterity or changes your strength or whatever, and then you have to do a lot of recalculating of your character sort of on the fly. Yeah. And all the derived values based off of those stats. That's quite different in the game.
Right. Now. Usually it's like if this is something that so, for example, the enfeebled condition is kind of like having strength damage, but instead of saying it's strength damage, change all the stuff that relates to strength. It says, here are the things that changes. It lowers your damage, it lowers your attack bonus. So we kind of speak more directly to the final numbers rather than having the change this and then change all the things that cascade down from that. Just so it's a little more direct.
And it's a little easier and less math at the table, but without removing the complexity or even the narrative thing of what's happening when you're enfeebled.
Dekul in chat points out that you basically get spring attack at first level with the new action system. Okay. Man, we want it took me a long time to get spring attack.
We want to make combat more mobile and give kind of more flexibility to your turns, and I think that's really working really. That's been one of the really good successes of the playtest. People are really enjoying that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I wasn't 100% sure how I would feel about the new action economy, and then I played a couple of sessions with it, and I adore it. I really, really like it a lot.
Ryan, do we want to get to the pre-submitted questions? I'm worried we won't.
Yeah, that's fair.
We actually have a lot of variations of this same question, so I'm just going to group it into one so we don't keep asking it again and again.
Great.
They're wanting to know about the magic system. Specifically, people are asking about, is there still prepared spontaneous spellcasters, or basically, I think they're worried about the wizard and the sorcerer being the same thing.
They're really, really different in ways that I think you'll find really interesting comparing it to first edition. They're still prepared casting and spontaneous casting. There's two separate categories in addition to like innate spells, which are kind of like spell-like abilities were in first edition, and some special powers that you can cast in other ways. There's definitely still prepared casting and spontaneous casting. We wanted to maintain that kind of different feel of those classes, and that's still coming through. I don't think anybody has changed the type of spellcasting they used for the full casters. There are some people who have more spellcasting overall than they used to, and some who have less overall than they used to. But like the cleric, the wizard are still prepared, the sorcerer is still spontaneous, the bard's still spontaneous, and that kind of thing.
Is it safe to say that it still uses the I pick a specific spell with specific parameters and memorize it like the Vancian system?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's also some other cool things too. Like, for example, you know, if you're casting Magic Missile and you want to put more components into it, which is to say spend more actions casting it, you could fire off more missiles. So there's a little bit more flexibility.
The heal spell is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because you can do a touch for an action, ping somebody over there for two actions, or do a burst for three actions. That people have really been enjoying that one as well.
Are we going to see a lot more of that throughout the whole spell list?
We're using it very judiciously, because if you have too much of that, then nobody knows what you're doing ever. So we're really keeping it to a small number of kind of iconic spells that we really know we want to make extra special. It's one of those things that, and also spells that take three actions to cast instead of two. We're using those very rarely and very judiciously, so that everybody kind of has a general idea of a spellcaster's turn is going to be a spell and one other action.
Right, but that action, interestingly enough, could be another spell. So there are other spells that have just one verbal component, for example.
Like Shield.
Yeah, so I cast Acid Splash, which was two actions, and Shield, which was one in the same round in the playthrough that we did on the podcast, and it was kind of mind-boggling to get to do that.
And you see something like Shield, because it works kind of like a shield, costs one action. So if it's something that really compares very closely to something else in the game, those get a little more leeway to have kind of a different number of casting actions and that kind of thing. And like Featherfall, you can cast as a reaction.
I would hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's
nope.
No reactions. King of Rock is asking, how many actions will it take to summon?
I believe that's 3.
And it shows up right away?
We're in the middle of doing some revisions to that, I think, but I think after some playtesting, what we're settling on is 3 actions, shows up right away, acts right away with 2 actions on its turn.
Hmm. That's interesting. I like that. Okay, the other question we got that's kind of related to this, I just kind of want to tack it on while we're talking about the subject, is on one of your preview posts, you said that you were going to make spells useful when they come, but become less useful in utility as levels gain. What does that mean? Are we going to actually have our spells just disappear from our brain?
So if you're used to Pathfinder 1, it's very easy to describe it. It is just the caster level-based scaling in the individual spells goes away.
Okay.
So if I want to do more damage with a fireball, I prepare it as a 4th level, 5th level, 6th level spell. For some of those spells, they're going to scale really well. The hold person type spell still stays really good, even if you're preparing a low-level slot. So you're going to, especially if you're a prepared caster, you're going to be able to prepare things in those lower slots that hold their utility while preparing some of, like, your damaging spells and some of that kind of stuff, spells that have better effects at higher levels. You're going to prepare those in your higher-level slots. And if you're a spontaneous caster, you don't get left behind because we're very generous about how often you can swap out your spells that you know as you level up. And we're also including retraining rules in the core so that if you've made a decision you don't like, you can go back and redo it.
Yet another example of something we added in later books that really belongs in the first book. Mm-hmm.
What you just said evoked a lot of people comparing the new edition to 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons, something that I've seen posted a lot and I've seen refuted by Paizo staff a lot. So just to calm the people in chat down, how is that not like 5th edition? Why do people keep making that comparison?
I think there are a lot of comparisons to 5th edition that are off base, but this is one where it is kind of similar. Oh. I mean, the concept of heightening spells was there in 3.5 and in Pathfinder 1. And we knew that we didn't really want spells to, like, all your first level spells to just be way better. And that's kind of, you know, the quadrilateral wizard linear fighter thing. Quadrilateral. I like quadratic that. Wizard.
Yeah, that's better.
Wizards are squares.
They nice. They fit in a 5-foot square and they are square on every dimension. But that is one
but
where,
I play hexes.
Yeah. The funny thing is, Mark Seifter came up with that system and kind of implemented it. And then we were like, and he hadn't read 5th edition. So we're like, Mark, did you know they did this in 5th edition? He's like, nope.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting idea and has a lot of utility. So.
Well, and it's, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's like they're branches of the same tree to some degree, right? I mean, the design goals that they had with D&D 5th edition were like, how do we, okay, so 4th didn't really work. How do we take kind of the basic 3.5 rules, or really going all the way back to 1st edition, how do we evolve those into today? And they had their own set, I assume, of design goals. We're kind of doing the same thing in a sense of like we had Pathfinder, which was an off route or an off branch of 3.5, and now we want to make Pathfinder the best version of Pathfinder it can be. And so there's going to be some things that are similar, but there's a no way like an intent to like make this 5.1 or something like that. Quite frankly, we're not, I don't know if I would speak to everybody, certainly not the guys on the design team, but like, we're so busy playing Pathfinder, which we enjoy, that like we're not experts at 5th edition D&D. You know, we wouldn't dream of making an even better version of 5e. That's not the goal. The goal is to make a better version of Pathfinder, and it may be that some of the solutions that we come up with are somewhat similar to some of the solutions that they came up with, but quite frankly, some of the solutions that they came up with are very similar to Pathfinder in the first place. So,
and we a lot of people kind of on the message boards have been asking, like, is this like a different version of 4e, or is this like a different version of 5e? And really, it's based on Pathfinder. Right. So it's not really like a different version of either of those.
Yeah.
It is kind of trying to streamline some of the stuff of Pathfinder, but still keep it really pretty crunchy and really expansion heavy, like the things that we know a lot of our fans really love about it, that there are going to be more options and all kinds of stuff they can really dig deep into.
Yeah.
Whereas like 5e is kind of a little simpler system a little more loose, kind of a different play style than Pathfinder's. Yeah. And we wanted to maintain a similar play style while smoothing down some of the rough edges.
Yeah, I think that you know, in particular, the way that we talked about streamlining the rules in the announcement, the way that we talked about proficiency in the announcement, and the way we talked about background in the announcement, those are three words I think that people have associated with 5th edition D&D. And their implementation of that stuff is actually significantly different, as will become clear with the next few blogs that we'll post, because we're doing one on proficiency and we're, you know, and so on. If someone in the listening audience is concerned that, like, oh, they're dumbing down the game or they're making it too simple and all of that, really that is not the case. You know, we want the game to be easier to teach. We want to smooth over some of the kind of the stuff we've been talking about this whole podcast, or just things that didn't make sense or whatever. But at the end of the day, the core value of Pathfinder's design philosophy is we want you to be able to create with our rules the hero that you have in your head, not one of three heroes or not one of, you know, a couple of different options. And whereas the options presented in one 576-page book are by necessity going to be a little bit more limited than the options over 35 hardcover books, we're building the foundation with the core rules that we can expand upon in ways that offer, in many sense, I think, more choices and more customization options than in the current Pathfinder. You know, just because there are more things that have not been a part of at least the core version of Pathfinder from the beginning. Things like ancestries, which are not just a decision you make at first level, but something that you come back to again and again throughout your career, so that no two dwarves are really going to be exactly the same, let alone no two dwarf fighters and things. And there's class feats that you get to pick. There's skill feats. I mean, there's all kinds of different stuff that is not currently in the version of the Pathfinder core rules, or perhaps is, but you need three different books to kind of make it work. This is a way to kind of holistically do that all in one. And so I guess a lot of people seem very excited about the new edition of the game, which is great. And as we reveal more, I think people will find more and more things that they're excited about. But the one kind of fear that I've seen more than any other is like, oh my God, they're just going to make the game too simple. They're going to make the game too easy. And they're going to strip out all of the fun sort of complexity. That is absolutely not what, you know, is in the design remit of this game. This game, we want to have tons of depth of character options. And, you know, like I said, there are some people, I think, who want to play their investigator or want to play their, you know, their Ifrit character or whatever. Not all of those things are going to be in the first thing of the rules. So,
if you compare the first edition core rulebook to the eventual second edition core rulebook, you're going to have a lot more options.
A lot just more. Out of that. A lot more. And I think you'll have
nothing close to an entire
10 years of Pathfinder, you know. And so we'll get to a lot of that stuff. We'll do new stuff as well. We're coming for you, Ifrit players. Like, we'll get you, you know. But we got to make sure that elves work before we get into Wayangs and stuff like that.
Now, that's sort of been like the identity that in the post 5th edition, post modern role playing game, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, Pathfinder's identity has sort of claimed that we are the super customizable game. We're the game where there you can think of a character and we've got a rule for that. Is that a crown you still intend to keep?
Hell yeah. I mean, of course. That to me, that's what Pathfinder is. You know what I mean? It's like, yes, it's heroic sword and sorcery. Yes, it's delving dungeons and all that. But for me, it's making the character that you see in your head that you want, or perhaps being inspired by some option that's in a book that you didn't even know you wanted until you read it. That's really key. Tactical complexity and interest. I love the grid. I love miniatures. I love the fact that it's a game and not sort of just a exercise in role-playing or acting. I'm down for that too. But, you know, Pathfinder is a tactical role-playing game, and we're not changing that. We'd be fools to change that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Alex, you had a question about post-release?
Oh, no, I thought Eric summed that up good when he said that we want to wait to the other side of the playtest. Originally, I had a question about what Paizo was going to do after second edition came out, because one thing that I've seen a lot of is a lot of people seem to be kind of like, oh no, are they going to move to the slower, steadier rate of Starfinder products, or are they going to keep up like the Pathfinder engine? But when you had said earlier that it was something that you had to talk about after the playtest, I thought that was fine.
Yeah. You know, the truth is we have not locked in every part of our 2019 and 2020 schedule yet, you know, and part of that is we're almost there. You know, part of it's just the timeline that it takes to do that stuff. But, you know, I will say one thing, and I think that a lot of people have a very reasonable concern, which is, okay, so is it am I just now starting over again? Does it go core rulebook, and then I buy the bestiary, and then I buy the, you know, the advanced player's guide, and then ultimate magic, and then ultimate combat, and then yada yada right down the line, you know? And the answer there again is no. You know, I mean, yes, there's going to be a core monster book. Yes, I assume there'll be a book that introduces another passel of character classes and stuff like that. But we are not just going to regurgitate products that people have already bought. We're not just going to convert everything. We're taking a holistic look at the whole thing. We're taking the opportunity by some of the new subsystems that are being introduced here to create truly new stuff that nobody's seen before. We've got all kinds of interesting things in play with the campaign setting that we are going to do. So, like I said, when we started Pathfinder, you know, we sat down and we're like, okay, what books are we going to do? Well, obviously we have to do the core rule book. Obviously we got to do the monster book. But like pretty much immediately in some of those original meetings, people are like, okay, and then we got to do Oriental Adventures, and then we got to do, you know, the Dungeoneer Survival Guide, and we got to do Unearthed Arcana. And I was like, no, we're not doing that. We're not just going to create exactly the same content that people have bought two times, three times, four times. So we're not going to do that with Pathfinder either. Now, that said, I mean, obviously we've been talking about, well, when are we going to get my Weiyang, and when are we going to get my Investigator, and when are we going to get all that? A lot of that stuff we will present, because people will be murdered if we don't, essentially. But we're not just going to – we're just not going to just – I refuse to just regurgitate the same products. And we've never done it. We didn't do it the first time with D&D books. We're not going to do it the second time with Pathfinder.
And as someone on the design team, some of those books that are more concept-based are really some of the most interesting ones to work on, and you can really have a lot more fun with them.
Right.
Kind of my least favorite types of books to work on are the ones where it's like, well, we're going to do some classes, and we're going to do some feats, and we're going to do some spells, and we're going to do some magic items. And yeah. That's the book.
Yeah.
Which there's certainly a place for that, certainly, especially early in an edition cycle where you're trying to get people back up to speed a little bit closer to where they left off. But in the long run, those kind of books, it's really hard to stay inspired, and it's really hard to still have fun writing them. And to give people, I want to be able to surprise people with stuff they really didn't expect. And part of that is having a cool concept for the book at its inception. And I think we're working on a process to kind of get more kind of fresh ideas for how we set up each book.
For the record, I will totally buy an advanced ancestry guide if you guys make it. I got to get my foxes back.
Now, that's another thing that kind of blown up on the form. What's this ancestry thing?
What's this ancestry thing? Well, in a basic sense, ancestry is just a new word for race, but it goes much, much deeper than that. It's a decision that you make at your character's creation, and then periodically there are a series of decisions you get to make to make yourself even more, if you're a dwarf, to make yourself even more dwarfy, if you will. Yeah. And that is something that we can continue to expand upon down the road. So that's it, basically.
When I hear ancestry,
semantically, it gives us the opportunity, if we so wish, to put human ethnicities and half elves and half orcs and whatever the heck else we want. We could do those things as ancestries without getting into like, well, this is technically a sub race of the, you know, like we don't need to go there. I'm not saying that's the direction we're going to go, but it opens up more opportunities for additional.
Because we've been pretty focused on kind of the core rulebook esque, you know, loadout of ancestries.
Yeah.
We haven't really gotten super deep into, you know, how do sea elves work or whatever.
Right.
But that's something that we're going to explore later on.
Yeah. And I think it's also something that because there are significantly new elements of it, it's one of the areas of the playtest we're going to be watching pretty closely. And I suspect that by the end of the playtest, the playtesters will give us even more ideas than we've already had on that front. So, I'm super stoked about that change.
So building off of Ancestry, one of the topics that you guys put out as being in the core rulebook or playtest guide that you've even mentioned before that's been, I don't know if controversial is the right word for it, because I think it makes perfect sense, but not everyone seems sold on it, is the fact that, like, goblins are a player ancestry in the book. And to a lot of people, goblin is, you know, they're cute and they're fun and they're like Paizo's image, but they're also kind of synonymous with thing that I stick my sword into. Yeah. So how are they going to be presented in a way that, like, they don't turn into Pathfinder Society Kender?
Pathfinder Society Kender? Are you talking within the context of Pathfinder Society specifically, or just more generally across all
tables? I think more generally, but, like, I'm thinking of me playing Pathfinder Society and, like, going to draw my sword and the goblin has stolen it.
Right. Well, here's the deal. You can't be an evil character in Pathfinder Society, so you cannot an evil goblin, period.
Chaotic neutral.
Well, you could do that. You know, and a little bit of sword theft between companions is not a problem. No, I don't know. We're going to find out. You know, I mean, the write-up of the goblin ancestry is lighter on, you know, you like to eat babies and stuff like that, and a little more on, you know, how a goblin might work within the context of an adventuring party.
There's also kind of a precedent in that, and Jacobs talks about this a lot, that the PCs are extraordinary people. And
right.
if you're a goblin PC, there's something special about you that kind of sets you apart from the typical conception of a goblin. And so how you actually play out that character can work in a lot of different ways.
And I think that goblins, insofar as the way that we've portrayed them in Pathfinder to date, yes, they've certainly been largely portrayed as monsters and evil monsters at that. But they, you know, as opposed to, say, if we were going to take the orc and make the orc a main race, goblins have been sort of presented as being just outside the periphery of a lot of our cities and a lot of our cultures and things like that. And so you've got goblins who routinely go and raid the junk pile in, you know, Sandpoint. You've got, it's not that big of a departure. If you look at, say, a city like Absalom, where you might have a Cyclops walking down the street, or you might have an Ifrit, or you might have a Wayang, you know, a goblin isn't really that crazy. Now, a goblin who goes lights on a bunch of things on fire and slits the jugular horses, you know, that guy's going to have problems, you know, but it's not going to be illegal to be a goblin in Absalom. And that is a little bit of a shift, you know, to be totally honest. You know, when we've been publishing the Weeby Goblins adventures for Free RPG Day, those are some of the most popular Pathfinder adventures that there are. And so we're not just jamming these guys in there because they're a mascot for the company. We're jamming them in there because people genuinely seem to enjoy playing goblins. And to the degree that some people use it as an excuse to just be as disruptive as humanly possible, they can do that just as easily with a gnome. And that is something that we're going to ask Pathfinder Society players and GMs to be cool about and hope that it works. And eventually we trust our community to kind of self-police odious player behavior.
And we're also, I want to make 2 points on the goblins and on kind of the player behavior at the tables. We are putting some more words into the document talking about kind of the social contract and how to play well with others. I'm not entirely sure those are going to be in the playtest because it is limited on space. We have some words written that we know we're probably going to have to hold off till the actual second edition core rulebook. But we are kind of talking a little more about that explicitly in the text. And the other thing with goblins is, while we're making goblins a playable option, we are not saying all goblins are getting are cool people.
Yeah.
They're still going to be in the bestiary. There are going to be the minor reveal, chaotic evil goblins, and they are going to be, those entries are mostly going to be talking about them as adversaries.
Yeah.
Oh God, spoilers!
No.
The world's most obvious spoiler.
Oh my God.
You've mentioned alignment a couple of times now. Is the alignment system staying the same?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of the class restrictions are going away on alignment. And we're also, I don't want to talk too much about this, but there are some of, like, the detecting alignment and those kind of things that can disrupt games. We're both kind of introducing a little more fuzziness into those, so it's not just like, you've got evil intentions, you're a bad guy, but kind of trying to keep it so the GM has a little more kind of say in how they present this information to the player in the individual spells. And we also have a tool for kind of saying, if this is something we know might be contentious in a game, if you don't want to include it, you don't have to include it. And I'm not going to talk exactly about what that system is, but it's something that kind of goes throughout the rule set.
I remembered another thing I hate about Pathfinder. Okay, so I hate the spell Detect Magic and the way that it works at the table. Because, first of all, it takes several rounds to get through, which is annoying. And then, second of all, it's... So I'm all the stuff I hate as a GM. So, like, Logan, you're my player, and you're like, I detect magic. And I'm like, you detect the presence of magic. And then everyone else has fun, and then the next round I go, you detect 3 magical auras. And then you go, well, let me make a check. What kind of auras are they? And then I'm like, what's the difference between transmutation and it's conjuration magic. And what the hell?
This item's transmutation.
What does that tell you at all? And so you've just wasted like 5 minutes of your life getting information that is at best you can like deduce. Like, I think it's gonna hurt me because it's necromancy. Okay, so necromancy is helpful, but like the other ones, you're not really, you know. And so there's been changes to that.
It's less helpful now than it used to.
I really like the shift to detect magic, which was not even something I ever talked to these guys about. But oh boy, do I hate the way that works in the game. Yeah. But I want to be clear too. Like I'm talking just at me as a GM about this stuff that I don't like. I love Pathfinder First Edition. I've been playing Pathfinder for 10 years. I will play stuff for First Edition Pathfinder probably forever. I don't want, you know, the idea isn't we're going to sell Second Edition Pathfinder by talking about how much First Edition Pathfinder sucks. First Edition Pathfinder does not suck. First Edition Pathfinder is in some ways our life's work. You know, so I'm not just going to sit here and like run down the game. And like any GM, there are parts of the game that I don't love, but like I want to make it clear, there's a lot of people out there in the wake of this news who are like, I'm going to stick with First Edition Pathfinder. And my response to this is like, fine, you know, play what you want to play. We're going to keep all of the First Edition rule books in print in the pocket edition size. We're going to get to the ones that we haven't done yet. And as long as people keep buying them, we will keep reprinting them. We're not retiring First Edition Pathfinder Society scenarios. We know that there's a lot of people who want to play through their whole story arc or get to a certain level with their character and all that. And we want to make it possible for you to be able to do that. So there is also a lot of people that I've seen who are like, not interested until I get my Wang Scald character, I'm out, you know? And it's like, fine, give us a little bit of time, you know, we'll get there. And then at that point, when the game has the robust, if what you're looking for is that kind of endless options, we'll get there, you know? And if you're not ready to jump in and kind of start with a smaller group, just give us a couple of years, you know? Like, we published like 30 adventure paths. The adventure paths take a year or two to play. You'll be fine, and we'll be fine too. So, you know, I'm cool if people don't want to play Second Edition Pathfinder and would prefer to play first. That said, we're going to try and make Second as awesome and as exciting to existing players so that they're going to want to come over. And we certainly want playtest feedback from people who are excited about it as well as people who are skeptical about it. So I just, you know, I just don't want there to be this like, I'm a first edition guy, I'm a second edition guy. Everyone's playing Pathfinder and we're cool with that.
I kind of want to see the forums with for... Like, go ahead, Alex.
I kind of want to see you do that like with figures. I'm a first edition guy, I'm a second edition guy. Oh gosh, no, what's Perrin got?
And then they hug because they both like...
Yeah, because they both like Galarian, I hope.
Some of what you said, your issues with Detect Magic, seem like there are also some issues with the Schools of Magic having a lot of crossover. Is there going to be any simplification of the Schools of Magic?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that.
All right. Lots of interesting things around. I won't go into this any more than what I'm about to say, but lots of interesting things in the way that magic is categorized and organized.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it is kind of taking some of those ones like transmutation and conjuration, where it's just like, it's all this stuff. and kind of splitting some of those off where they feel a little more natural, places where people have been like, why is this? I think in the playtest you had, Acid Splash or Acid Arrow or something. It's Acid Splash. Why is this conjuration instead of evocation? Right. It's like, because it feels like evocation. People have been saying that for years.
Exactly.
So some of those things have moved.
So it's evocation now.
Yeah. Conjuration especially has gotten a little more refined, and some of its stuff has gone to other places.
And there's something like 5 times more transmutation spells than any other school of magic in the core rulebook. Is that going to be equalized a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. It's still got quite a few. There's still a couple schools that we're probably going to want to add more spells to between the playtest and the final. But because of kind of limited space and time, some of them are a little lighter still, like necromancy.
I think that is a real value of a big open public playtest. You know, we've done playtesting here for months and months, but we've had fewer than probably 50 people, you know, all told. Let's say fewer than 100 people all told playing this game. August 2nd, we drop the free PDF and the books come out. We're going to have tens of thousands of people playing this thing all at once, each with their own idea of what character they want to play and all that. And so if someone says, hey, this is the character I really wanted to play, and I found through playtesting that I didn't quite have enough versatility or spells or options, that's going to be extremely useful feedback for us. Because, of course, we've done that for all of our favorite types of characters, or Mark's made fun of my old character and tried to make him or whatever, but we haven't necessarily played your favorite type of character. And so that's feedback we're really looking forward to. And it's really the only kind of feedback that can get this game where it needs to go. I often say 10,000 brains are better than 20. You know, I work with some of the smartest people I've ever met in my whole life. And every single day, I'm sort of astounded by how brilliant people are at Paizo. But that there's only 40 of us, you know, or 30 of us. There's thousands and thousands of brainiacs out there who are going to come at us with stuff we never even thought about. So that's part of why we're doing this. So no matter how good we are at anticipating things, the minute it meets thousands of gamers, it's just a totally different deal.
Well, speaking
of... Sorry, just a second, Brian. We're coming up on an hour and a half now. Everything's still good?
Yeah.
Schedule-wise cool. On your part?
Okay, sure.
Let's keep going!
Awesome. Okay, so I'm sure that this is a concern, because we actually have about 5 different people that asked us a similar question in the pre-show. Is they mentioned that in the Glass Cannon podcast, which I totally recommend that any of our listeners go check out, the special where that you guys ran through Crypt of the Everflame, or the first part of Crypt of the Everflame, how that was seemed to be very easy for Jason to convert on the fly. So how easy is it going to be to use our previous APs, our previous campaign setting books, things like that, in this while you guys are waiting to get your Wei Yangs to us?
Go ahead.
So one of the things I've mentioned to a couple of people is that to convert an adventure is usually not going to be too hard to go from first to second. You're going to have to do some monkeying with the treasure, because the treasure is kind of on a different scale. But most of the encounter groupings are going to be transferable fairly easily. Obviously, if there were any new monsters to that adventure, you'd have to do a conversion of those. That's going to take a little while. We're doing a new monster system, so it would probably take like 15 minutes for a mid-level-ish monster to convert one. But most of the encounters that are using stock monsters, you can just convert over fairly easily.
Yeah, I think
most of the spells are still going to be there.
I think the reason why Crypt of the Everflame in particular was a relatively easy adventure to convert is it was the first Pathfinder adventure that we ever did. And so it uses the kind of basic monsters. It uses the basic classes and stuff. It's going to be, frankly, easier to go, oh, it's a giant spider. Oh, giant spider stat block. I'm good to go. For some of the stuff that we put out in the first few years of Pathfinder, then maybe it is to convert something that's pulling monsters from Bestiary 6 and the back matter of Pathfinder 92 or
Rise of the Rune Lords will be easier than Iron Gods.
Exactly. You know, we'll get there. But I think that for people for whom ease of on-the-fly conversion is a goal, focusing a little bit more on the beginning of the Pathfinder catalog is going to make your life a little bit easier until we can catch up. And
so you're probably good with some of the other ones that are that are using kind of more classic monsters.
Yeah, like Dragon's Demand and stuff shouldn't be too much trouble. Right. And, you know, again,
Iron Fang, you're probably going to do all right.
Yeah, you'll probably do okay.
You mentioned something there that made me very, very happy and probably Ryan very, very angry. It's one of our fighting points. So what's this about, 15-minute mid-level monsters?
So that's the monster system we have in place now. And this is one that's been very contentious on our message boards, too, is rather than going through the full kind of character building process in order to make a monster, we kind of start you out with the benchmarks and you give the monster the abilities you want it to have. So it's a little more of a designery approach, and you're kind of designing them toward their purpose rather than designing them based on a structure that then defines how they're supposed to work, and you kind of hope that it gets close to the numbers. That said, if you want to do an NPC and you want to make a fifth level fighter enemy and you design a fifth level fighter, it might have more stuff than it is really going to need, but it'll work fine in an encounter. At least we think. We need to do some rigorous playtesting on that to make sure that's the case, but generally they're going to be about the same power level. A monster and a PC of the same level will be about on par.
So one of the things that I think we're trying to do, and again, the playtest I think will help determine to what degree we've been successful, is we don't want to take the fun out of designing, say, an original adventure. But we do want to try and take some of the tedium out of it. And so one of the things that we've been hearing from our GMs forever is that, it takes 2-3 hours to prep for a game session that's going to go 4 hours. If we can get that down a little bit and have more of the time that people are engaged with Pathfinder being at the table and playing, that seems to us to be ideal. On the other hand, I know that there's a lot of gamers who look at the core rules of a game as the physics engine for the entire universe, and that it just that they want to make sense of the world by sort of saying everything works according to exactly the same rules. And I would even at times put myself into that category.
That was one of the big promises of third edition in the first place.
Right. But I have also spent an excruciating amount of time prepping for an adventure by fiddling with every skill point bonus that this monster might have, and it's 8th feat, and then it lives for 3 rounds. And I'm like, well, that sort of sucked. And so, you know, we're experimenting with, is there a way to make it quicker? Is there a way where you can more speedily generate a creature that does what you need it to do for that given encounter? And it's going to be interesting to see people's reaction to that.
Yeah, and part of that is, We're trying to get the numbers of monsters and PCs to be relatively close, so that if you do make that fifth level fighter, for example, their numbers will be pretty close to a PC generated fifth level fighter. But we also want to make it so you don't have to go through the entire character creation process to do that, and that we don't go with the assumption that every PC has gone through the same path, or that every NPC has gone through the same path as a PC, that there are different ways to grow as a character, and that the rules for PCs represent just kind of one path to becoming a hero or villain.
Yeah.
Now, part of the system that was presented in a similar system was presented in Pathfinder Unchained and in the Starfinder system. Will there be, and the only reason I ask this is that they were very popular, will there be the class templates to help make a gelatinous cube ninja? Or not specifically ninja, but you get the idea.
We don't really know yet, because we're focusing just on the playtest bestiary, mm-hmm. Which has a different set of demands than the final bestiary. And it's really kind of a collection of monsters instead of the entire system for creating them, which we expect will come in another book. So we're not 100% sure on that yet. Right now, we're just kind of going to do a selection of monsters for people to use, and you know that you can build a wizard if you need a wizard.
So one thing that I hear you guys mentioning a lot is you talk about different kinds of feats, like, oh, this is my ancestry feat, this is my class feat. And at least to me, when I hear you talk about it, it sounds almost like you took like the categories for things like, oh, these are Arcanist exploits and these are rogue towns, and just kind of streamlined them. Is that accurate? And are we going to see more like streamlining of terminology in Pathfinder Second Edition?
I don't know about the terminology question, but I would say that stuff like rogue exploits typically will be moving into rogue feats. We wanted it to be a little more, that knowledge of how you build a character to be a little more easily transferable from class to class, and to give some of those classes like cleric more customizability from the outset. So yeah, part of it is just so that the characters are kind of more built in the same way, and you don't have to learn what a rogue exploit is versus a fighter's combat feat, because they are kind of occupying the same space.
I would say, especially because the book, parts of the book are now in editing, and I've been having a lot of conversation with the editors, codifying the terminology and making sure that things that should be named the same thing are named the same thing is a task that was started by the design team and continues all the way through editing. And we're paying a lot of attention to how things are said and how similar things need to be said kind of the same way. Another thing that I would say that is significantly different, I mean, not really significantly different, but maybe there's just a different focus on it, is with like certain things will have tags, you know, and that's like maybe you'd have the dwarf tag or something, and so we can have things that affect dwarves very easily, and that kind of goes through a lot of different aspects of the rules, and so there is more of a sense of like, how can we say something once instead of having to say it 100 times or 5 different ways.
A similar thing is with spells. One of my big crusades is getting rid of things that say this counts as or functions as. I kind of want it to be very clear whether it is the thing or isn't the thing. So, for example, something that says this functions as invisibility. Well, if I have an item that triggers when someone casts invisibility, does this work or does this not work? I really want to remove some of that ambiguity. So, for example, like spell-like abilities are more explicitly, these are spells that you access in a certain way, rather than kind of having their own set of rules that are not really super evident to how they work. So a lot of things that are kind of like spells are just spells and appear in the spells, so that things are a little more cut and dried.
Yeah.
Now, we got a question here, and I think it's pretty fair. I'm trying to find who asked it, because the chat, we're not used to it scrolling by so fast. This is a very busy night. Okay, apologies for not getting the name, because it scrolled by faster than I could catch it. But since the hit point generation is very similar to Starfinder, is the stamina and resolve system going to be in Pathfinder 2?
No, it's not.
No.
Just hit points.
You know, one of the things about Starfinder that was really exciting to me, especially after having worked 8 years, I think, at that point on Pathfinder, is it gave us the opportunity to really take a different approach to some stuff, not just within the rule set, but also just in terms of, like, we're about to do a series of 3-volume adventure paths, you know, for Starfinder. We couldn't really do that with Pathfinder, I think, without some people kind of freaking out. And so, so we knew we had the opportunity to really do some uniquely Starfinder stuff for Starfinder. And I think that the idea of the stamina and all that kind of came out of, like, well, there's going to be a lot of laser guns in this game, and how does the mechanics of how science fiction works and how science fiction arsenals and stuff like that work, how can we make this game seem more science fiction-y, because that's the remit of Starfinder's design.
Yeah, it's not emulating a different genre.
Exactly, and that's not the goal for Pathfinder. So while there are definitely some innovations and some ways of doing things that we did with Starfinder that we have applied to Pathfinder, and in fact that were designed originally for Pathfinder, because we've been working on Pathfinder 2nd Edition that predating the beginning of Starfinder, Starfinder is not really like a stealth half edition on the way to Pathfinder 2nd Edition. They're two different branches off of the same tree.
There's a lot of stuff that was like, we think we can solve this problem in Starfinder with some technology we developed for Pathfinder.
Exactly.
And there have been a few things that have made their way back in.
For real. There definitely are. But anyone who's expecting to open up Pathfinder 2nd Edition and see a fantasy version of Starfinder, that is just not going to happen.
Yeah. They will be either pleased or disappointed, depending on
whether they want them. Yeah, whether they
want. Judging from chat,
so I've narrowed down our questions to 7 that I absolutely want to ask before it gets too late.
Great.
Can we try and muscle through some of these?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Will there be a more robust spell creation mechanic in the core rulebook?
Spell creation?
I think similar to the monster creation, but for spells.
Not in the core rulebook now.
Okay. Tom Gans, how will the new rule set make high-level play easier, especially for GMs?
So it's because I've just been playtesting part of the playtest that is at 17th level, of the playtest adventure, that is. So it's a lot less rocket taggy. So you know that if you put a monster into the game, it has it will do something. Not to say there aren't ways to remove things entirely. I got some of my monsters mazed, which is still a challenge. But it's there's a lot better balance on the higher level spells, and things that just end encounters are not happening as often. And there's still like pretty serious stuff. There's still, you know, a disintegration that's successful is still going to take something out. But there's a lot less just kind of that overlying stress of having to remember all these things that a monster can do, but also knowing you're only going to remember it for 6 seconds of game time. So that's been reduced a lot. We're also, the simplified monster creation helps a lot with that, because if you need to generate a monster, you don't have to build 34 hit dice into it and do all the calculations derived from that. You can kind of figure out the specs that you needed to meet and then have it meet those.
Is the math tighter too? Because you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the podcast about how the BAB and all that sort of, because there's different fractions, at eventual point, yeah, things become impossible. So you've tightened the math up at the high level?
We have, yeah. So what you'll see is, like, a fighter is still going to hit more often as they're going up in level. Like, their chance to hit is going to be really high. The Paladin's defense is going to be really high. And I can speak for my poor Rune Giants that the Paladin's AC is really high. But the gap between them and the wizard is not going to be so great that everybody just says, well, this is pointless. Squash the wizard, because that's the only way to do it. And then the wizard says, all my spells invalidate everything you've done. It's an expanding gap as you go up in levels, but it is not as drastic. And we usually tried to set things so that rather than saying the fighter's the only one who has a chance to hit, we've said that the fighter hits even more often than he was before, but we're setting kind of the monster baseline numbers so that the other classes are not falling all the way behind anymore.
Mm-hmm. Tom Gans asks, will there be similar stacking bonus rules?
Those have been... it depends on which part you're looking at. We've kind of tried to minimize the number of different bonuses that you're having to track and how many different things stack. So the number is much smaller, and we've also tried to do away with here's a bonus that stacks and here's one that doesn't. So like the dodge bonus, the circumstance bonus. We've tried to say the types don't stack, and there's still going to be a fair number of bonuses that people are throwing out there, but we want it to be a little easier to figure out, like, should I cast this or not? And having to compare like three different things is just a little too much trouble. So we wanted to kind of say, I'm going to try to get the highest conditional bonus I can get, rather than saying, well, this one's morale, and this one is circumstance, and this one is, I don't remember the types anymore because I've been working on a completely different rule set for 2 years. But you get the
luck.
Drift. Yeah, luck. So we've compressed it some.
Many role-playing games use systems like fate points or bennies to let players control how the story goes or how the game is turning out. I use hero points from the Advanced Player's Guide in my games. Is that something that we can expect to see in second edition?
You can expect to see hero points in the playtest. Which I don't know if we have a blog plan on those.
That's pretty huge.
That's a bit of a reveal.
Not functioning exactly the same way, but it is kind of a... it's not exactly an influence the story as in I'm going to introduce this NPC kind of thing, because we wanted to keep it a little more simple and mechanical for this, and we want to see how people react to it. But it is kind of a currency that the players have, not their characters, and they get to decide how to spend it.
Interesting. I didn't expect that answer.
And I'm really curious how people respond to it, because it might be really divisive.
But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
I am sure that Shane Hadakanen, who asked that question, will be very happy to hear that response.
Andrew L. Birdwell wants to know about prestige classes.
You will see a concept that would have at one point been a prestige class in the core rulebook.
Oh, yeah, right. I believe.
Or in the playtest rulebook, rather. Mm-hmm. Can't speak for the core rulebook. That's too far away.
Robert Evans, will there be any additional material released for first edition before the release of second edition?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Tons. Literally the release schedule doesn't change between now and August 2019. Well, that's not true. There are a couple of things. So we've got Planar Adventures, which is upcoming and is the next hardcover in the Pathfinder RPG line. That is relatively rules light, but it's got some cool rules in it as well, and it's a big overview of the multiverse. And so that is coming on like a freight train. We've got three more adventure paths that we're doing. So we've got War for the Crown. We have Return of the Rune Lords, which is going to be in first edition. We have that I can't say, that's going to be kind of the last first edition adventure pass. So there's, 18 more adventures right there. We've got, bi-monthly player companions and campaign setting books from now until July of 2019. Pathfinder Society's got an entire season in between. Literally dozens and dozens of products, pretty much as normal. The only thing that's not normal is that ordinarily, obviously, the slot that the playtest is going to occupy in August would have been a first edition hardcover book, and then we would have a winter first edition hardcover book as well. We're actually just not going to put anything out in that slot because we want everybody to focus on the playtest, and we certainly want to focus our efforts on the playtest as well during that period. So in that regard, there won't be something, but everything else is pretty much staying the same.
Follow up. What about a spring 2019 hardcover?
Currently, we do not have a spring 2019 hardcover on the schedule because we're going to be prepping all that's the time when, again, this is sort of inside baseball, but that's the time when we will be taking the feedback from the playtest, incorporating it into the final version of the core rulebook, and also finishing up whatever we're going to call the monster book and the other fun stuff that we'll be releasing in August of 2019. So I guess in that regard, there are two fewer hardcover Pathfinder first edition rulebooks than there would have been.
Follow-up question to that. Have you guys decided whether Pathfinder 2nd Edition is going to mark the adventure path line resetting to Pathfinder 2E1, or is it going to keep going off with the numbers from there?
We haven't actually decided that. That came up. I sort of feel like I've personally decided that, but based on some feedback from some other people, it appears as though not everyone's on the same page as me, and so I'm not really sure as of yet. What do you guys think we should do?
Reset.
I think you should reset, yeah. But the collector in me doesn't want it, but I think it's the better option for new players to not be intimidated by, oh, this is Pathfinder 206, maybe I don't want to start here.
Yeah, well, we haven't made the decision yet, so hard to say. Like, really literally, we are very focused on the playtest, and so I have a draft of the 2019 schedule, but it's still got a lot of blanks on it. Mm-hmm. I've got a pretty good idea of what the launch products are going to be, for the August 2019. I've got a pretty good idea what the winter trimester is going to hold, but there's still a lot of big questions. And actually, it's been really fun around the office, sort of saying, okay, well, what if we don't do this thing? What do we do instead? And what type of format of a product have we always wanted to do, but precedence has prevented us from doing that. There's a lot of opportunities for us to do things a little bit differently, and it's very exciting to have those conversations with my colleagues.
There's a really quick question in chat that I normally wouldn't answer, but I think this is an easy one for you guys. It related to this. Shin Kakaider, and I probably got that name wrong, so I'm sorry. Will we have to do, if you're a sub right now, will you have to change your subs when 2E rolls out, or will your sub carry over?
Again, I think that kind of remains to be seen. I feel like for the adventure path and for the role-playing game line in particular, I don't anticipate much change. We'll very likely alert people and say, hey, things are going to change. You know, let us know if you want to change your subscription status. But I think it, you know, it'd be quite a – I think it's a hassle to have to go in and re-mess with your subs and stuff. So my preference would be when we're taking something from a like to another like, then it's more like, hey, heads up. With a lot of warning, this is what's coming down the road. Be sure this is what you want, but not have to have people go through the whole process of resetting up their subs. Now, that said, I don't know yet, you know, is the player companion going to be exactly the same pace and the same size? Is the campaign setting going to be the same pace and the same size? I don't know, you know, and so
if I remember correctly, in a specific note, the playtest is not part of it.
And yes, and thank you, Logan. The playtest stuff is not part of a subscription. So these three products, the playtest rulebook, the playtest adventure Doomsday Dawn, and the playtest flipmap multipack, though you will have to order those separately. And you will, if you want print copies of those, you will have to pre-order. And again, that's not me trying to gin up extra sales. That's me looking at the audience with my own two eyes and saying, I promise you we will not be printing enough of this. We're terrible at that. And we will run out. So if you want a print copy of this stuff, particularly the adventure and the rule book, we are not reprinting those. It's not outside the realm of possibility down the road that we might go, hey, that's a really cool flip mat. Let's repackage that as a classic or something because it'd be useful down the road. But there is no use for a playtest adventure after we've locked in the rules. There, you know, we are not going to reprint. So we get one bite at the apple. If you want a print copy of this, I implore you to pre-order from your local game store or order it on Paizo.com starting on the 20th of March because we're not going to make enough, I promise. So I don't know how badly we'll mess it up, but we've messed it up every time so far. We're going to mess it up again. So if you want it, you really do want to pre-order.
I have two final questions. One's for Logan and one's for Eric. Can you guys have time for them?
Absolutely.
Okay. One of the things on the playtest site, Logan, mentioned that there are 10 levels of spells. Does that mean that there are 0 level and then going to 9 for a total of 10? Or does that mean first level, second level, third, fourth, fifth, blah, 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 up to 10th?
I will say the spells go from first level to 10th level. There are no 0 level spells. Cantrips still exist.
We are going to get much more into what we mean by 10th level spells as part of the rollout.
Okay, Eric, question. Yeah. Is the cover of the playtest document going to be the cover of the final book? Because that cover with the color scheme and the logo is so dope, and I love it so much.
I'm in love with it, but I don't think so. We commissioned that piece from Wayne, and first of all, this book's going to have more Wayne Reynolds art in it than anything we've ever published. I'm staggered by the piles of sketches and character illustrations that are on my desk right now. It is so awesome. We had Wayne come to the Paizo offices last year, and he sat down with our creative staff, and we riffed off of each other, and he'd be like, how about this for the orc? And then we're like, yeah, I don't know about that. And then the next day, how about this? And how about this? So he's doing multiple iterations of stuff. He's done, you know, characters of every ethnicity. He's done a redo of all of the iconic characters, sometimes with new gear and stuff like that. It's amazing to see it come together, and that's going to be in both the playtest version and in the final version. What I think we're going to do in the playtest version is some of it's going to be kind of in-process stuff, so we're going to do some of it's black and white. So the whole book will be color. There'll be a lot of color illustrations in there, but you're going to see some of the process because, again, this is a book that is very much about the process of making the final book. But when we get to the final book, it's going to just have so much Wayne Reynolds art in it. It's going to be sick. I can't wait. The cover we commissioned to harken back to the beta playtest cover that we did in 2008. So we wanted to have the characters fighting a white dragon, and we wanted to throw in the new goblin iconic on there. We wanted to show a little bit of some of the new outfits and the new gear loadouts of some of the more familiar iconic characters. It was mostly just like, let's have Wayne do this cover. And of course, I should have known I'd fall in love with Wayne's cover. You know, it's beautiful.
So good.
So there was a moment, I will admit, and I think it was even last night when I was looking at that cover and I'm like, man, you know, it's going to be tough to top this for the actual core rulebook cover, but it's Wayne, so I'm not worried about it at all. He's going to come up with something even more amazing, or just as amazing for the...
But, like, the colors on the cover, it's and, really like, the good. Colors of the logo, and, like, the spine, and it all looks so good together. So I can't even handle
you know,
it.
And some of that is Sarah Robinson as well, our art director. She's been here, you know, she was on our staff when we did Pathfinder 1. She took over as the senior art director on our staff, literally in the process of making Pathfinder number 1. And so she's been instrumental throughout this whole process. And she, just as guys like Jason and Logan have been working on game design, you know, they're much of their careers and are that good because of it, Sarah is that good, you know, at the art stuff. And it's been really awesome to work with her on the art side of this. And I have every expectation that the final logo for second edition and the final cover is just going to blow everybody away.
I really like that logo.
Well, we'll see what ends up happening. You know, moving away from the existing Pathfinder logo is kind of a necessity just so people can kind of differentiate between the two. But, you know, I will say the playtest logo is not the second edition logo. It may be very similar in some ways. I don't know yet because we haven't even started designing the second edition logo yet. That comes down the road.
Now, no shade to our next questioner, Josh Ross, because I can understand that there was some confusion here, but I even went on an epic rant on Facebook that I'm sure both of you saw on this subject. The question is, and I know that this isn't true, so this is your chance to address it. I was curious about how they're thinking by doing a 2E when the original concept was to never do another edition. I think it certainly do, but want to know how they discussed it internally.
Well, I think it's interesting because as far as I remember, and I've been here the whole time, we never ever explicitly said we would never do a new edition of Pathfinder. We did say when we kept doing when we started doing Pathfinder role-playing game in the beginning that we wanted to use a system that allowed us to tell the same kind of stories that we really wanted to tell. And we felt, as did a lot of our players at the time, that what they were seeing of the then current fourth edition of D&D didn't allow them to do that. Now, putting aside for a second whether that's true or not, that's a matter of, you know, taste. But we certainly felt that way, those of us who were on the staff at that time. So it was very important for us to do a version of the game that was true, not just to 3.5, but to what we saw as sort of the whole tradition of fantasy tabletop gaming going back to the very beginning. And so we felt legitimately as though Pathfinder was an evolution of 3.5. And so what this new edition is it's an evolution of Pathfinder. And so that's basically the long and short of it. I had hoped even at the beginning that one day we might be so lucky as to survive to have a second edition of the game. But at that time, again, it was like, well, we're all very into 3.5 and we want to have this be as compatible as humanly possible. But again, by the time you get to the Advanced Player's Guide, Pathfinder really starts becoming kind of its own thing. And so so it has continued to evolve as its own thing all along. And I can certainly sympathize with people who sort of are like, I came to Pathfinder because I didn't want to ever have to do another edition change. But at least in terms of where we're coming from, the hey, you'll never ever have to change for the rest of your life was not part of the value proposition that we were offering people. What we're offering people is the ability to continue to play in a way that was a continuation of their experience rather than a complete fresh start. And although I think the playtest will tell us whether this is the case or not with the current version of the Pathfinder 2nd Edition, I still feel very clearly that this is along that same evolutionary path. And so I don't know. I mean, I think that some people interpreted what we were saying then as some kind of assurance that we would never do a second edition of the game. But quite frankly, we don't really use the never terminology at Paizo ever. You know, even when we were talking about launching the Pathfinder RPG, you know, people would say, are you guys never going to do fourth edition compatible product? And I would never even say that, you know, even though I knew in my head it was very, very unlikely. And in particular, because the OGL didn't really allow us the flexibility that we felt we needed, I was pretty sure that that wasn't going to happen. But things change in business and in publishing. You'd be nuts to say never, never will we do this, never will we do that. So, we certainly didn't want to rush into a new edition. You know, I think that if you look at the timeline between second edition D&D, well, let's go back to first edition D&D. First edition D&D, AD&D basically goes from about 78 to 89. So you got 10, 11 years there. Second edition D&D goes from 89 to 99. You've got 10 years there. Third edition D&D goes from 99 to like 2003 or 4, does a relaunch of 3.5 at that point. That goes on till God only knows, but not tremendously long. And so what we wanted to make sure is that even though it became inevitable at one point that we would do a new edition, we wanted that to be more like the sort of geologic edition changes that we saw when we were kids, and not like the hyper insane, you know, sort of market driven, oh my God, sales are drying up, let's you know, like in the comic book world, like new number one, you know. We didn't want to do that simply for some artificial way of boosting sales. We wanted to give the edition as long as possible. And there were definitely times, you know, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, where people on the staff were like, hey, maybe it's time. And others on our staff, particularly those of us who've been through this a number of times and who have lived at least two Alexes, you know, in our lives, we wanted to go as long as we could, you know. And I think also from my perspective, there were definitely things as a publisher that I wanted to make sure that we were able to do before we kind of went back and said, okay, now let's kind of go back and open the patient. One of those things, just speaking personally, was Occult Adventures. I really wanted, you know, I knew, again, it's like, okay, back in 2008, 2009, okay, we got the core rulebook, we got the monster book, what's next? Oh, let's do Oriental Adventures. No, let's not. Let's do Planar, you know, Manual of the Planes. Well, we're finally kind of doing that 10 years later, but not right away. And let's do Psionics. Well, no, I didn't like Psionics. And at the same token, Dreamsguard was doing a good job with the people who really wanted the Psionics rules as they'd been in 3.0. But I always felt like Psionics, I mean, we did this podcast 2 years ago, but I always felt like Psionics was too science fiction. How can we get something that felt legitimately more like fantasy in there with those same kind of concepts of mental magic and stuff like that? So I wanted to make sure we did that. You know, I'm sure Jason and Logan and everybody had different design challenges that they wanted to make sure that we addressed. And so part of it was just like, let's not start things over until we've legitimately done a full edition. And I feel very comfortable saying that I feel like in terms of the mechanics, Pathfinder First Edition is a full edition. I think it's more of a full edition than perhaps any edition of an RPG ever, you know, just in terms of the amount of content out there. So we were very careful not to do it too soon. But if from my perspective, we were also careful not to say that we would never do it. I don't know in retrospect that we were careful enough, since a lot of people sort of like, you prom. I mean, I was called a traitor the other day online, which I thought was spectacular. No. We never said we'd never do a second edition, so here we are.
I can testify for that because I've been following that question extremely closely, from a professional.
Now, we have been saying to you guys and others, you know, when asked, and you guys have asked us over the years, are you working on a new edition? Or is there a second edition? And we would always say stuff like, well, we're not working on a second edition, because that's true. You know, I mean, it's very important to me, and I think to everyone at Paizo, to be honest with fans. And so we're not, you know, if we're not working on a new edition, we're not going to say that we are. And if we're, whatever, I'm getting into double negative territory here. But the point is, about 2 years ago, when people would ask us that question, we didn't give that same answer. We didn't say, oh, we're not working on Pathfinder second edition. We found different ways to answer that question. And so so there you have it.
Do you expect to see someone to do to Pathfinder first edition what you did to Dungeons & Dragons 3.5?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that people's reaction to the playtest will probably have a lot to do with that. And if we can come up with something that Pathfinder fans feel comfortable with. I think there's less of a chance of that happening. I think that the fact that we're not sort of doing a scorched earth marketing campaign where we're like, that version of the game you play right now is absolutely terrible. Here's something new. You know, maybe that will help for that not to happen. And then I think the fact that we're planning to keep all of the rule books in print means that people who want to stay in that first edition ecosystem still will be able to go out and buy books and still be able to get, you know, new players into that. They won't, of course, be able to get next month's book, but we've given them 30 plus versions of books, and I suspect most people don't have every single one.
And the PDFs are still
available. And the PDFs are all still available and stuff like that. So will someone come along and kind of repackage that stuff and give it their own spin? It could happen. You know, we'll see.
I didn't realize you were keeping the books in print.
Yeah.
That's a surprise.
Yeah, because again, it's like I said earlier, if like people are playing Pathfinder, I'm excited by that. And if, you know, if they want to stick with the first edition version of the game, we're going to be doing interesting things with our campaign setting. You know, we're going to be doing interesting adventure paths. And I strongly suspect that there will be at least fans who are going to say, well, here's the first edition stats for this new second edition adventure path. And that's okay. There's going to be people who don't want to come over to second edition, period. There's going to be people who don't want to come over to second edition until there's more stuff, more options, because maybe that's what attracts them to first edition. Well, that if they want to stick around with first edition for a while, then, you know, that's then I'm proud of that, frankly, because we worked really hard on first edition Pathfinder. We like it.
Lone Dwarf points out a clever moment from last time you were here, just a couple of weeks ago. He says, I asked on that podcast how Pathfinder 2.0 was going to be, and you said great, totally honest.
Absolutely. There you go. It's going to be fantastic. I am really, really proud of what the team's put together. I think Logan and Jason and Mark and Steven and everybody on the Paizo staff has been working really, really hard on this. And in a way, honestly, that I feel is like even more sort of a team effort, especially in recent months than a lot of other projects we've done at the company. And I'm having creative meetings with my friends that people are as buzzed as I've seen them in years and years and years. So it's very exciting. It's a great time to be at Paizo, and I think in very short order it's going to be a really great time to be, even better time than it is now to be a Pathfinder player.
Well, I was hoping to get one more Eric Mona pet peeve rant, but that was such a positive note to end on. I can't switch gears like that. So this has been an amazing 2 hours. I think it's been extremely informative. It's an exciting time to be a Pathfinder fan. I'm sure it's even more exciting on your side.
Yeah, you should see some of this art, man.
Non-committal. All right.
You can do an art blog.
There must be like a shrine in Eric's office where he just has all the art lined up and he just stares at it.
No, there's a 3-ring binder where I've put them in plastic sleeves so I can just look at them longingly, you know, with each turn of page. Whoa, look at those gnome items. Look at this. Oh, my God. I will give one little kind of mini spoiler, I guess, actually. One of the things that is so great about having Wayne do the art is that Wayne is also a gamer himself and a player himself. And so he really understands the lore and understands kind of how gamers game and what makes a gnome different from a halfling and all that, and some of the stuff he's done. So for each race he's done, like, here's male and female of like a warrior and a mystic and a rogue and a, you know, whatever, and here's a whole page of gear created by that culture. And so there's this awesome bit where it's like a bunch of halfling equipment, and part of the things with halflings in Pathfinder is that they kind of go unnoticed. They're following along in the footsteps of humans. They're really adaptable. And so Wayne pulled that into the equipment. And so, for example, you've got a halfling shield, you know, that's like a circle with a little, you know, like a handle. And you can unscrew the handle, turn it around, and it doubles as a frying pan, you know. And you've got a helmet that can be taken off. And then where the ears go, you can run a stick through it, and it hangs down, and it's like a pot for cooking soup and stuff like that. So it's just like, even just little ideas like that
are
really inspiring.
We actually added a halfling racial weapon that's a fork based on Wayne's.
Yeah, and that's great when you can work with an artist like Wayne. You can sort of say, here's what we're doing design-wise. Maybe you can reflect that in the art, and then he does the art, and we go, let's pull something from that art and put it back into the game. So it's this like circle of life. You know, it's amazing. It's just great.
So I can stab enemies with a halfling fork.
That's sure. It. Sold. I'm buying 10 copies.
And then eat with that same fork? I don't know.
You've already sold me 10 copies.
I'm sticking to gnomes. Halflings are weird.
Prestidigitation is for cleaning off.
Yeah. All right. Anything you guys want to shout out to before we wrap things up? Any convention appearances or something that's not getting enough attention right now?
Well, Jason Bullman and Stephen Randy McFarland are at GaryCon right now. They're literally playing, well, actually now, given the time, they're probably drunk in the bar, but they were literally playing for a second edition Pathfinder with people at GaryCon right now, and we'll be continuing to do that through the week. Then we're off to the Gamma Trade Show, which is an industry-only event, but we'll be playing with retailers and distributors there. Some news will probably leak out of that as well. And then from there, we're sending people out all over the place. We'll be at PaizoCon, of course, Memorial Day weekend here in Seattle. We'll be at UK Games Expo shortly after that. We're sending people to the Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio. We're sending people to PaizoCon UK, all leading up to the big release at Gen Con, where we'll be able to talk about everything, because you'll be able to look through the book and ask us specific questions. We will be playing demos with the general public at all of those events, so swing by some of those, and we'd love to see you. The core rulebook, or I'm sorry, the playtest rulebook, the playtest adventure, and the Flipmat 2-pack are available for pre-order at retail stores now. Will be available for pre-order on Paizo.com on the 20th of March. We'll be closing orders around May 1st, so that's the kind of window. If you want print versions of these books, this is the time to pre-order them. If you're cool with the free download, those, of course, will go up on August 2nd when the product's released worldwide at Gen Con and at game stores and bookstores and on Paizo.com all at the same time.
Nice.
PaizoCon is in 78 days, FYI.
Oh, God, no.
According to PaizoCon countdown correspondent Darren Caldemeyer. Thank you, Darren.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing with people at PaizoCon. I'm not going to a lot of these other shows, but really looking forward to having all the folks there get to experience this game.
Yeah, it's really, really, really fun. So we can't wait for you guys to try it out.
I guess it's safe to assume most of PaizoCon is going to be dedicated to second edition.
Well, no. I mean, we've got a ton of first edition Pathfinder Society. We've got every gamer who's an employee at Paizo is going to bring their own games to play. Some of those will be second edition. Some of them won't. We'll have the Delves set up with second edition pretty much the whole weekend.
Plenty of Starfinder.
Plenty of Starfinder, of course. Still a lot of exciting things happening at Starfinder while we're doing all this, and so we'll have that there. I'm going to be running a game of the 90s VCR game Dragon Strike as the GM from Ooh. Dragon Strike's video. I will be in character for 4 hours. I will never break the character the whole time. And I will be drinking bourbon like it is water that whole time, and people can come and watch us play if they're feeling brave tonight, and it will be great.
Somebody get that
on
tape.
So everyone doing all kinds of crazy stuff at PaizoCon. Second edition related and otherwise, but it will be the sort of debutante ball where we really put the second edition on a pedestal and get everybody the opportunity to play it throughout the whole weekend. So hope to see you guys. Will I see you guys there? Are you coming? PaizoCon?
I'm coming.
Yeah.
I'm a maybe.
Aram?
I'm a maybe. I can't afford both usually, but this has been the year I really want to go.
Do you guys have a Patreon for No Direction?
No. Soon.
Topic.
Everybody, help Param get to PaizoCon, for God's sake.
Get him there, everybody.
Anyway, we'll see hopefully all three of you guys there, and everybody who's watching, thank you so much for your attention and your support of Pathfinder over the years, your great questions. I just can't wait to throw dice with you guys, and we can all play this thing together.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, Alex, come on by. We'll play with you for sure.
All right. That sounds like I'm going to get murdered horribly on the floor.
Catharsis is an emotion that needs filling from time to time.
We're going to get up there, and it's going to be like a special event, and it's just going to be Mona destroys No Direction.
I would never do that.
For charity.
Maybe for charity. For charity to get Param to PaizoCon. We'll kill you guys in front of everybody.
All right, let's wrap this thing up, guys.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, then. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello.
I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
Alexander Agunis.
The Everyman Gamer.
Oh, I usually don't end with that, but sure, oh. The Everyman Gamer.
And if you want to find the path, you need no direction.
Bye, guys.